We're starting round three in the heavyweight fight, Job's friends and their accusations versus Job, who doesn't have a clue what's going on, trying to maintain his faith in the Lord, and he does a really good job of it. One of the things that I love that we've seen, I know it's hard to keep, especially if you haven't been here every time, but it's hard when we stretch it out this way to keep in context that it all took place in one conversation. Couldn't have been even an entire day that this whole debate that covers almost 35 chapters. And in that period of time, Job's friends are not, they're not convincing him that he's a horrible, wicked sinner, and that's why this is happening, because he knows that everything is right with the Lord. It is, don't ever underestimate the strength that comes from knowing that your accounts are settled with the Lord, because the accuser isn't going to stop accusing. That's his deal. He's going to be in your face the rest of your life. When I can stand before God and know that I am not good, but I am his, and my accounts are settled with him, there's great strength in that. And so while they get more angry and more bitter, some of the bitterness is because they're absolutely convinced they're right. It's really hard to argue with religious people that are convinced they're right. The only one that really is going to be able to shut them up is going to be God. We're going to see in a few chapters, and he will do it very convincingly. Job tries to defend himself, but the thing that we see progressing through all of this debate, we see Job go from shock that these people that came supposedly to comfort him, number one, they're not even listening to him. They're just lecturing him. And last week we saw Job say to Zophar at the end of round two, Job said, look, here's how you guys could comfort me. Just listen to what I'm saying. That would be comfort. Just don't talk. Just listen to what I have to say, and that would be greatly comforting. And then he presents a very compelling argument why their doctrine can't possibly be true. And you see, Job gets stronger while their argument gets weaker and weaker. The interesting thing is, though their argument is getting weaker and weaker, they are arguing more strongly and more strongly, which is often a dead giveaway that something's out of whack. Job, in the middle of his pain, in the middle of the not understanding what's going on, just about every week now, we've heard him come out with some outburst of amazing faith, some statement of his faith in God, and it seems like every time he does that, he gets stronger. I don't know if you have asked yourself why these guys are arguing so strongly for their doctrine. It's obvious that some of it is pride. It's obvious that they're convinced they're right. They're convinced they know, you know, exactly what Job is about, and he's not agreeing with them. And so pride kicks in, and they just get angry. And we saw them last time saying, look, we know better than you. We're older. And we know you're a liar. We know you're a hypocrite. You're just pretending that you're okay. But this is their doctrine that they're arguing so strongly for. Bad stuff doesn't happen to righteous people. Bad stuff only happens to wicked people. And because this just came out of the blue and devastated your life, you must really be wicked. In fact, the last time Zophar talked, Zophar said, you know, you probably didn't get as bad as what you really deserve. And their contention is that what happened in Job's life is clear evidence of the way God treats all wicked people. Suddenly, they're cut off. And of course, these guys have gone into great eloquence about their houses are destroyed, they have no posterity, their children suffer. Very cruel things to say to somebody that's just lost everything and still grieving over his kids and not understanding. Why do you suppose they're arguing so strongly for that doctrine? It's interesting, people still believe that today. And you want to have a very interesting, heated debate, talk to somebody that still believes that. Why did they argue so strongly? I think the answer is very poignant, and it's worth considering. It's fear. If they're not right, if the stuff that happened to Job happened to a good guy, then bad stuff could happen to anybody. And they find safety and self-protection in their doctrine. That's not where our safety and our protection is to be. The best place to be safe and protected is to trust God, that whatever he allows, even if it's temporary suffering, is ultimately going to work for our good. That's our safe place. There are all kinds of promises in the Bible that say we're going to have trouble. Spoken to righteous people. You have to cut holes in your Bible, as many do, to believe the doctrine that only good stuff happens to good people. And Job's argument, and bad stuff doesn't happen to good people. Job's argument last week, I just thought it was wonderful when he said, look, just shut up for a minute. Your comforting isn't working because you're not really telling the whole truth. He said, ask the man on the street, when does this supposed cutting off of wicked people, when have you ever actually seen that happen? He said, my observation, and the man on the street will agree with me, I'm sure, is that wicked people seem to live long, happy lives, die pleasant deaths, fat and happy and wealthy. They don't give a rip about God's opinion, and he doesn't pull their plug. Rarely do you ever see a wicked person suffer the way that you are saying, I'm suffering because I'm wicked. He said, just doesn't make sense. So that can't be the right answer. And he said, besides that, God knows me. If I wanted to hide from him, I couldn't. I am blameless before him. And of course, the minute they said that, Bildad had a hissy fit because he called tantamount to blasphemy. But it's really interesting to keep going back to chapter 1 and chapter 2 because God was the one that said Job was blameless. It's interesting, it's really actually kind of sad when you read some of the commentaries on the book of Job and you wonder, did these people actually read the whole book? There are scriptures in here that the name it and claim it people use. There are scriptures in here that I've heard people say that the reason all this stuff happened to the good old Baptists, I mean, people that should know better because they really study the Bible, that say the reason all this happened to Job was because of his pride. But we know why it all happened, don't we? The information is given to us. It's not a mystery. If you read the whole book, God says in the beginning, and God says in the end, which is a fabulous ending, God says, this guy is fine. None of this happened because of anything Job did. It was a challenge by Satan, who said, nobody would actually worship you the way Job does, because God was bragging about Job. Nobody would actually worship you that's got all the stuff that he's got if it was all taken away. And God allowed Job to suffer greatly for a little while. Compared to however long it took to raise 7 kids and be fabulously blessed before this happened, and 140 years later of blessing, this took place in a couple of weeks. It was bad. It was hard. But one of the most important things to learn from a thorough study of the book of Job is that for a godly person, all suffering is temporary. Satan can't reach in and do anything but what God allows. God does allow sometimes righteous people to suffer. God does allow for a while. God does allow wicked people to be blessed. God himself blesses them. Oh, Bob, I don't know if I should believe that. Well, what did Jesus say? Jesus said he causes the rain of blessing to fall on the just and on the unjust. Who causes it? God does. James said, every good and perfect gift comes down from the Father of heavenly lights. Everyone. And of course, we're going to see that dilemma dealt with tonight, in tonight's passage. Did I wander off on a thought and not finish it? I'm famous for doing that the older I get. So, why are these guys so strong in their argument for their doctrine? Well, because if it's not true, then they're afraid. You mean the bad stuff could just happen to anybody at any time? And the answer to that is maybe. If God allows it for a righteous person to work a good purpose. I find it so sad that Job spent so much time defending himself, thinking he was defending and wanting to go before the judgment seat of God and defend himself when God really wasn't mad at him at all. I'm not sure he would have even thought that had it not been for his friends. It came in the things that they said. So we begin round three. Thank goodness that this is the last time Eliphaz speaks. He's really making me mad. He's the oldest of the three friends. And sometimes when people get older, they get more blunt, can I say kindly. They don't strive to be tactful as much, especially if they're angry. And he was just really ticked off. He was really mad at Job that Job wasn't agreeing with him. But Eliphaz, of all of the three, says some really wonderful things that are really true about what happens when a sinner rejects it and leaves that path of sinfulness and turns to God. He has some wonderful things to say. They're absolutely true. The problem is they don't apply to Job. So remember in the very beginning, I have the little T with a circle around it for all the stuff that people say in this that is true. And I have a little F with a circle for all the things they say. There's faults, and there's plenty of both of those to go around. And then I have another little N/A for what's not applicable. And a lot of what Eliphaz says in this last, I always think of this is like he's a lawyer, and this is his summation before the jury, except that he gives an altar call at the end of it. It's just good to keep your finger in the end of the book where you can go over in chapter 42 and God gets the last word in and it will be a lot less depressing. Actually, I find Job getting stronger and stronger as we go through this. So Eliphaz's last speech and his lecture and then his altar call, which must have not been very fulfilling because Job didn't bite. Because he really didn't have anything to repent of. Chapter 22. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, "Can a man be profitable to God, though he who is wise may be profitable to himself?" And there are all these little digs against Job's riches, and we're going to see why, because in the next few verses, Eliphaz thinks he's figured out why all this happened, what Job's secret sin is. And he thinks that Job got all of his wealth by being a cheater. And of course, that's not true. Job had all of his wealth because God gave it to him. He was a blameless man before God. So you'll see him get up ahead of steam here. "Is it any pleasure to the Almighty that you are righteous? Or is it gain to him that you," my New King James says, "that you make your ways blameless," literally is that you claim to live your life blameless. That's a good question, by the way. Does it give any pleasure, is it any gain to God that Job lived life the way he claims that he lived it? There's an answer to that. Absolutely. It blessed God's heart. How do we know? God said so. So, you know, what Eliphaz says a couple of things with great sarcasm in here, but the problem is he just has no idea that God does not agree with him at all. Oh, man, I've been there. Chapter 4, or chapter 4, verse 4. I think this is extremely ironic because it's sarcasm. He says, is it because of your reverence for God that he is correcting you now and that he enters into judgment with you? Is not your wickedness great and your iniquity without end? Thank you, Eliphaz, my friend. But isn't it ironic that he says, is it because of your reverence for God that this is all happening to you? And you want to say, yes, it is. Absolutely. If Job wasn't the guy that he was, none of this would have been happening. But that just doesn't jive with Eliphaz's doctrine, and it doesn't jive with some people's doctrine even today. I hope that somebody has told you, if you've been here very long, I know I've told you, that doing all the right things does not mean you're going to have a smooth life. There is going to be resistance to every step you take in a Godward direction. And when you purpose in a dark, an evil world to shine for Jesus, you're going to get shot at. You are going to be a target. That's the facts. It's a fallen world. It's true. If Job had just been, you know, a vanilla, average kind of, you know, get lost in the crowd kind of a guy spiritually, he wouldn't be going through this. But I'm sure glad that there was somebody like him on the face of the earth at that time, because you get to see how somebody who trusts God struggles with unbelievable catastrophe and still hangs on to his faith. It's not pretty. It's human. But he wins in the end, and I can't tell you how much that helps me. So Eliphaz's ironic statement, is it because of your reverence of God that he's correcting you? Well, for one thing, God isn't correcting him. But yes, the point of all of this happening is because Job was a good guy. So now he gets to the point, and then over the next maybe 8 or 10 verses, he sort of, he says what he thinks Job's sin is. First of all, his first 5, he says, your wickedness is great and your iniquity is boundless or without end. Because you have taken pledges or demanded collateral, is another way to translate that, from your brother, your fellow citizen, for no reason. And you've stripped the naked of their clothing. One commentator says that he translated those two sentences. And remember, Hebrew poetry is hard to translate, even for really smart guys, much less me. He said that Job demanded that somebody give their clothing as collateral for a loan. Later on in Jewish culture, God would say that it was sinful for an Israelite to loan money at interest and to demand collateral. God says, I don't want my people doing that. If somebody needs some money, loan it to them. In fact, if you give it to them, it's even better. But loan it to them, and you don't have to give collateral. And so it's interesting. This is way before there are even Israelites. But there's still the sense that this is a wrong thing to do. And Job, that's what you've done. And you've not given the weary water to drink. And you've withheld bread from the hungry. I didn't plan this, but have you noticed how this fits into what Jesus said on when we studied on Sunday? Where he said at the last judgment there are going to be people that, you know, he says, okay, continue on your journey away from me, which is what the word depart means. Poruo, it's the Greek word. Because I was hungry and you didn't feed me. I was thirsty, didn't give me anything to drink. I was naked and you didn't clothe me. And they said, well, Lord, we never saw you in those conditions. And he says, much as you did not do it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you didn't do it for me. Isn't it interesting that God thinks that's a big deal? In not just Jewish culture, but all of the Middle Eastern cultures, the Persians, the Arabs especially, and the Jews, Hospitality is considered an obligation. And if you are not hospitable, it's insulting. Americans are so backwards of that. We think that if we're hospitable, we deserve to be rewarded in some way. But it's so this was a big charge against Job. And it goes farther than that. It goes towards favoritism because verse 8 says, but the mighty man possesses the land and the honored man dwell in it. And the implication is the people that you honored, the people, the powerful people, you treat them differently than you do the poor people. You've sent widows away empty. And the strength of the fatherless is crushed. Therefore, or because of this kind of sinful behavior, that's why the snares are all around you and sudden fear troubles you and darkness so that you can't see. An abundance or a flood of trouble covers you. If I was Job, or if Popeye was Job, his pipe would be spinning around right now, and steam would be coming out of his ears, and he would say, it's all I can stand because I can't stand the more. Because none of this is true. What I find remarkable is Job does not answer any of these charges for seven more chapters. If you want to see, Julia and I were talking the other day about, wouldn't you just love to see the story of Job's life up to this point? What kind of a man, how he lived his life, that God would boast about him and say there's not one human on the face of the earth like this guy. Wouldn't you just love to see what that looked like? Read chapter 29. Because there Job answers these charges. And he says, not only is that stuff you said not true, but if you ask anybody who's actually dealt with me, my reputation is exactly the opposite. People who were needed justice ran to me. People who were needy came to me first. So these things are not true. But it begs a question, and I'm just going to camp here for just a minute. Where did he get these ideas? Well, ultimately, I mean, we know that came from Satan because Satan has been accusing Job from the very beginning. And Eliphaz, remember, is the guy the very first time he spoke. He talked about during that 7 days where they were silent, just sort of sitting there with Job. One of those nights he had a dream, and when he had a dream, this real spooky presence came, and which he says was God, and told him really what was going down. And so maybe it happened then. I don't know. Jesus said that Satan is the father of all lies. Means that every lie finds its root in his character. But I think there's something else, and I'll just give you my opinion because it's worth considering. Because your reputation is not in your hands. Your reputation is in other people's hands. The only thing you have no control over your reputation. The only thing you have control over is your character. And you can work hard to be a person of stellar character and still have people sling mud at you and call you names and accuse you of horrible false things and that's your reputation. Your reputation is what those people think, whether it's true or not. And the only protection you have against that is to be a person of good character, and God may be the only one that knows. Well, probably he won't. Probably some other people will know. But here's the thing. This is something that probably all of us have experienced. When you don't know somebody, and this is bad, and the reason I'm saying this is because the church world is still guilty of this. People can get a bad reputation from church people who misjudge them and gossip and slander and spread rumors and stuff, and somebody coming along who doesn't know them, to that person coming along, that's who you are. What they heard is who you are. And until they meet you and they hear otherwise, that's your reputation. That's the person you are. Now, these guys supposedly knew Job, but they lived in different regions. They weren't neighbors. when all of a sudden the most fabulously wealthy person in all of the world has this horror happen, and these guys travel and show up in town.